Hi, and welcome to Last Man Standing. Here with me, Paul Stevenson, and this is Sunday, the 31st of July, 2022. Hope you've all had a wonderful weekend and keeping well. Got a round table tonight. I am going to be joined with Patrick Slattery and Euro. Euro is a British nationalist, and I met him at the Patriotic Alternative conference in the autumn last year, and he also spoke at the spring conference, at the Patriotic Alternative conference in spring as well. And everyone is familiar, of course, with Dr. Patrick Slattery. And so we're going to be talking about a few topics tonight. Before I go any further, do support the network. We're 100%, well, we're not 100% listener-supported, but we are mostly listener-supported. Best way to do it is just go to the homepage, and you can navigate there the various different options and methods of donating to Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. With all that said, okay, let's get straight to it. So we've got, as I say, Euro and Dr. Patrick Slattery. Welcome to the show, lads.
Thanks for having us on, Paul.
Thank you very much for joining me. So, Euro, you've got some topics that you've prepared that we can get the ball rolling with. And Patrick also mentioned Nancy Pelosi's trip to China. So let's try and get through as much as we can. And we've got an hour. So I guess, what have you got, four or five topics, Euro?
Yeah, there's a few different things, and some of them are kind of related in certain ways. But first of all, I'd want to talk about the kind of Tory leadership race going on. And of course, it's entirely unelected from the populace at large, but within the party. And that will definitely lead to a slightly different outcome than if the people in general had their say. But it comes down to incompetent or brown. And I don't know which is worse, but we can kind of discuss that in a bit more detail.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I was talking to Patrick about Liz Truss, and when the, was it Kate McCann collapsed? I mean, it was, I'm sorry, but it was comical. But it was an interesting moment because I think we saw a human side to Liz Truss, and Patrick and I speculated before about, are these people more corrupt or are they just more stupid? And I'm kind of leaning towards more stupidity on Liz Truss's part because I did see a human being there. I mean, it doesn't unequivocally prove that she doesn't, you know, she's not a complete cynical liar. It's looking like it's either her or Sunak. Well, those are the only two left.
Yeah, so basically it's going to be her or Sunak, and it comes down to whoever we have, they're going to be anti-white. And I think one of the other front runners was this woman, Penny Mordaunt, and she was directly behind some sort of push for more newer hate speech legislation, making it even more illegal for us to talk common sense about the issues that are going on in our country. So I'm glad that she's gone. And it comes down to Liz Truss, who is widely known to be incompetent, and Rishi Sunak, who is very visibly non-white. Thinking about this, he would actually be the second or possibly third non-white prime minister, depending on your definition. Some people might say that Boris Johnson was non-white. I think he was an eighth Turkish and an eighth Jewish. Now, that's kind of a matter of opinion. His majority would still be European DNA, regardless of where his loyalties lie. But certainly we had another Jewish prime minister in the past, Benjamin Disraeli, and that would have been our first non-white prime minister. But Rishi Sunak, if he becomes PM, will be the first visibly non-white prime minister. And I think that will kind of rankle people and bring more scrutiny on him. And if it comes down to you know, these people are going to put in the same policies either way, I think it's better to have the person who is visibly the other, because it will get more scrutiny and it will drive more kind of popular resentment and, you know, like hope towards change in the future. But with Liz Truss, I think she was the foreign secretary, wasn't she? And against Lavrov, Russian foreign minister. Yeah. And they were talking about Ukraine. And he's like, well, do you recognize our sovereignty over the Moscow region, or, you know, some part of Russia that's been Russia since the very beginning and has not been Russia? And she's like, no, we will never accept sovereignty over that. It's like us saying to, you know, the French have invaded Germany, and we say, oh, we'll never accept the French's sovereignty over Brittany. So I don't know if that's, I mean, I think it's worse in a way as well, because as an incompetent, she's going to be more easily led. She's going to be more of a puppet. And we know if she's a puppet, we know who she's going to be a puppet to. So maybe it is better in a way to have the Brown, but it's not something I'm 100% on either way.
Yeah, I think I would prefer, I know it's bad, but it's a bit like saying, you know, how would you like to die? Would you like someone just to like saw through your head, or would you like someone to stick a pencil through your eye and die that way? I mean, that's the choice, really. I think I would lean slightly to Liz Truss. At least she's white. I don't want some Indian.
I mean, she's white, but in a way that's worse, because there's more of this kind of like false hope that it's all going to be okay, whereas I'm not an accelerationist, but the worse things seem, the more it motivates people to change. But sorry, Patrick, continue.
Yeah, I don't know enough about these people to really have an opinion, but how about the possibility that Rishi Sunak, as a visible non-white, would have to be a little bit more restrained in his anti-whiteness, whereas what's her name? Liz Truss might have to be a little bit more gung ho in her anti whiteness in order to prove her credentials. But I was going to ask. So I guess the next to the last person who was eliminated was that lady from Nigeria, who wasn't she the most pro white person?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we've gotten to the point where we've got to rely on the base Negro in order. White, because no white is allowed to speak for a white.
Well, I mean, that's very deliberate that they put this woman up there, and they're like, she's allowed to say it because she's one of them, which is inherently anti-white in the first place. It's like, this woman who's brown can say that, you know, like, brown people aren't always great because she's great. And it just gives like a focus for all the libertarian leaning people who are like, oh, this country's terrible, but it's not about race. You know, not all of them are bad. Look at this one. Look at this one. We can get behind her. And it's just kind of like pure boomer bait.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I'm coming down on the side of Liz Truss, because I'm sorry, I do not want some Indian scumbag being the Prime Minister of Britain. I'm sorry. In fact, I saw some clown in India, I don't know who he was, some diplomat or something, suggesting that the reason that Sunak has fallen behind is because of racism. And I thought, yeah, you absolute scumbag. India is one of them. Probably, I think there was a survey done. I forget how they did it, but India came out the number one most racist country in the world, and they know that, and yet he's using the race card. I thought, you sneaky little Indian scumbag. It's part of Indian racism and great pride that they have, that they would have one of their own as a Prime Minister of the UK. They would love that. So let's hope that doesn't happen.
Thinking about it, though, I mean, don't they say that one of the big drivers of the kind of proto-alt-right in the US was the election of Barack Obama, that this was something that actually drove a lot of people who were previously not political in any sense to realize that something was wrong and to get on board with more radical common sense politics? Patrick?
It's possible. There was... but even then, I guess there were some, you know, hardcore people who probably were on board with a lot of racial politics anyway, who objected to Obama because he was black. But like what you heard in the boomer sphere, there was this whole birther movement where he's not legitimate because he wasn't born in the United States. We don't like the birth certificate or the certificate of live birth that was issued by Hawaii. And there was some sort of technicality that in the year he was born, 1961, our naturalization laws or whatever, they wouldn't have allowed, for a mother to pass on U.S. citizenship unless she had lived for 14 years in the United States. And some of those, and his mother was only like 18 or 19 when he was born, and she had spent half a dozen years in Hawaii before it was a state. So it's like all this technicality. And, you know, had they prevailed, what would we have gotten? We would have gotten Joe Biden 12 years earlier. So, I mean, so like that whole thing was just like, I just thought it was just kind of like boomer retardation. You know, why would you want Joe Biden 12 years earlier? Joe Biden wasn't really any better 12 years ago than
he
now.
Would have been less senile.
He would have been less senile, so he would have been more effective.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, it's like, if this is kind of comes back to the very point we were just talking about with Liz Truss. Is it worse to be incompetent and a puppet? Or is it worse to be because, you know, if you're incompetent, you're a puppet of people who very effectively know what they're doing. Or you're competent and there is some capability that you might not go entirely along with the agenda. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, my thing with Biden, or I mean, with Obama, I guess maybe with Biden today and Bush years ago, it is rather than going after some sort of technicality, go after an impeachment on something real. And, you know, Obama, there was all sorts of things that he could have been impeached for. There was some sort of gun running deal he had with Mexico, where I think he could have gone after him for assassinating Muammar Gaddafi, because that's against our laws. We're not allowed. There's a law against assassinating foreign leaders. There's a lot of legitimate things that he could have, that people could have gone after him for, that have to do with policy, that would have really meant something rather than just some sort of technicality based on rumors.
Well, the problem with that is, even if you impeach them, it just kind of moves down to the next person within the Democratic Party, doesn't it? So you're going to have a President Kamala Harris with her Jewish husband.
Exactly. I don't want to get too far afield from our agenda for today, but we are headed into a very, very interesting situation presuming that the Republicans win the House of Representatives in the midterm elections, which is almost certainty. You're going to get a situation where a very likely humiliated Joe Biden, he may well be pushed out of office. And then Chlamydia Harris, as I refer to her, she would be elevated to the presidency. The vice presidency would be vacant. And in order to, according to the 25th Amendment of our Constitution, when the vice presidency is vacant, the president nominates somebody, and that person has to receive majority support from both the House of Representatives and the Senate. Well, and a very emboldened Republican Party after the midterm elections may very well just refuse anybody that Harris nominates. And so you could have the vice presidency vacant, in which case the next person in line is the Speaker of the House. Who knows who the Speaker of the House is going to be? The Speaker of the House literally could be anybody that the Republicans vote for, even if it's not a member of the House of Representatives. It could even be Donald Trump. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but
brother Nathaniel,
that will literally never happen.
I'm not saying, brother Nathaniel. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but what you would have happened, let's just say even it was Kevin McCarthy, who, if he were the Speaker of the House of Representatives, he would be the number two person instead of the vice president. And then and Harris is extremely unpopular. And then you got a situation where, you could have this constitutional crisis where there's an effort to push out Harris, and the next person in line would be the Speaker of the House, you know, McCarthy or whomever. And
this sort of political theory crafting doesn't go anywhere in practice, does it? We know that our enemies will always find a way to twist the law, whatever the kind of letter of the law is. They'll always find a way to twist it to their advantage.
This is not a matter of who's going to win, who's going to have advantage. This is a matter of having like a period of massive confusion. Which we're in a period of confusion now. It would be like the next step in the confusion. I mean, we've got a you know, a geriatric patient, somebody who's clearly isn't capable of running the country, is clueless, and nobody really knows who's in charge. If this is all by committee, if Ron Klain is really running the show, nobody really even knows.
Joe doesn't know who's in charge.
We're in a proxy war with Russia. We could be in a shooting war with China. We're heading into, you know, inflation like we haven't seen for half a century. All sorts of things are going on. You know, the Black Lives Matter riots and the Corona hoax and all sorts of stuff is going on. And we're just headed deeper and deeper into crisis. And this is a kind of political crisis that could happen. And, you know, I'm old enough that I remember what was going on in 1973 and 1974 when Richard Nixon was facing impeachment and all of a sudden his vice president resigned. Now, in that case, you know, it got resolved in a particular way and you had, you know, he was allowed to appoint somebody. But do you really think Biden's going to serve out his term? And if he doesn't serve out his term, then Harris has to appoint a vice president. And is a very emboldened House of Representatives going to allow for that?
I don't have any faith that the House of Representatives, even if fully controlled by the Republicans, is going to go against the Democrats in that way. You know, they're more likely to acquiesce to, you know, supposed good manners and good sportsmanship in politics as opposed to actually winning in any significant way. So I think that's kind of never going to happen. But something you did mention there. Did you have something to say, Paul?
No, I was just going to say, let's try and wrap this up because I want to get to some of the other topics you've got, Euro.
Yeah. So that was my point. Something that Patrick did mention there was this kind of ongoing Cold War proxy war against Russia and the possibility of expanding that into China. Now, as somebody who is for the people and against the state of our countries, I am kind of in favor, not of a hot war with China, which would lead to you know, massive loss of life, but an extension of this kind of Cold War towards China would be nothing but beneficial for pro-whites in the long term, I think, because it would weaken our own anti-white governments. And with regard to this ongoing war against Russia, we had in the UK a man who was unpersoned, who was personally, they say sanctioned, and it's a very strange use of this terminology that they've started talking about sanctioning individual people as opposed to countries. But a man who is actually a British citizen has found himself put on the sanctions list and having all his assets confiscated and locked for daring to make some so-called propaganda that shows the Russians in not too terrible a way as the British would like him to. Have you heard about that, guys?
Yes, I have. And also, Zelensky's regime over there have levels of audacity I've never seen. I saw Tucker Carlson cover a story where they are imposing certain similar type, you know, disinformation rules. They've got a blacklist in the United States of people who are pushing out pro-Russian propaganda. I mean, it's just staggering.
And have you got any input on this, Patrick?
Well, I think that it's so clear that Zelensky's decisions in regarding this war in provoking Russia and then pursuing the war, that these are so destructive to the Ukrainian people, the Ukrainian state, to the Ukrainian military. And you know, we have Zelensky and his the small group of people that are currently running Ukraine. Obviously, Jews are overrepresented, but Jews are only about an eighth, seventh, or an eighth of a percent of the population, and the Ukrainian military just cannot possibly be chock full of Jews. So you would have to think that at some point the Ukrainian military is going to turn against Zelensky and oust him. I've been thinking this is imminent and could happen at any time. And already in the you know, Ukrainian social media sphere, there are people who are complaining about the draft, and you know, middle-aged men and now even women are just getting picked up and then inducted, given a rudimentary training and insufficient weaponry, and sent off to the meat grinder to be killed. And nobody likes this. And, you know, if you're some sort of maybe nationalistic Ukrainian general, and you just see your army being destroyed and your country, the longer this goes on, obviously the more territory you're going to lose. If it goes on too long, there's not going to be anything left. I think it's just a matter, I you know, and there have been rumors that there's already been a coup attempt against Zelensky. The, you know, coups aren't easy to pull off. You have to have a plan. You have to have secrecy. You have to have cooperation. But I would think that there's probably something coming down the pike, and that would probably be how this war ends.
Euro?
Well, I mean, I'm certainly in favor of the Ukrainians kicking out any non-Ukrainian who doesn't have their best interests at heart ruling over them despotically. So we'll have to see what comes of that.
Well, another thing that's worth mentioning is I think public opinion and the tide is turning against Zelensky, because I actually saw, I don't know where you guys ever watch Sky News Australia. Yeah, they're a little bit like GB News, I guess. And, you know, up to this point, they've been, you know, banging the drum against Russia, this horrible invasion, the poor Ukrainians are in this, and all the rest of it. But I noticed one of their journalists has raised his head above the parapet and really went after Zelensky and the nonsense that that Ukraine is a democracy, and exposed him for, you know, being a parasite and draining America of their tax dollars. And so has Tucker Carlson. I mean, Tucker Carlson is probably the most popular radio host in America, and he hasn't held back about Zelensky either. So I think his little Vogue photo shoot was maybe not such a good idea, because that guy is arrogance and hubris is off the charts. So he thinks he can do what he wants, but that has not gone down well, you know, or his comments dismissing inflation as a concern, you know.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's, you mentioned inflation. We've got soaring food prices and energy prices across the West, which is, of course, related to this war. And, you know, what with the heat wave that we've been having in the last couple of weeks in the UK, you know, we've had huge demand for energy for air conditioning and things like that. And we've almost had, you know, complete failures of the power grid. We had to buy like extra power from Belgium at ridiculously inflated rates. And the news is all about how, you know, this heat wave is caused by global warming, and, you know, we need a climate lockdown next, and no mention of the actual real causes of the massive increase in the cost of energy and in food, and of the fact that our own kind of power generating capability has been systematically shut down. What with all these, so-called eco initiatives that leave us at the mercy of whether the wind blows or not.
Yeah, and it's actually genuinely worrying, because not only do we have inflation, but we see with the situation with the farmers in Holland that these people are, seem hell bent on stopping us produce food because it's bad for the environment. I mean, things are going to get very ugly. Inflation's already through the roof. We've got supply chain problems from COVID. Then the whole situation in Russia and Ukraine has exacerbated supply chains, and even further with things like wheat and fertilizer. Germany are in real trouble. I mean, you know, it's going to get really bad, I think, over the next couple of years. I don't think we've seen anything yet. I mean, my advice to anybody listening would be, and for myself as well, buy as much food as you can. Not just because of inflation, but who knows what's going to happen and how bad it's going to get, you know?
Buy arable land and grow your own food and stock up on things that last a long time.
You need money.
Yeah. But I mean, there are still things that people can do on a small scale. And of course, you know, as we've talked about before, any degree of self-sufficiency is kind of always a good thing and makes you less reliant on the system and less vulnerable to kind of all the leverage they have over you. But I mean, you mentioned, we're going very quickly through these topics now, but I guess we don't have a lot of time. You mentioned, you know, the Dutch farmers. I believe what's going on there is the Dutch government, because of some of these so-called eco initiatives, they've decided basically that they want to reduce the amount of fertilizer that all the farmers are allowed to use by about half. And if I'm not mistaken, it was a total or partial ban on these kind of nitrogen based fertilizers in Sri Lanka that has led to their government being overthrown, basically, because of the massive increase in food prices there. Now, most of these fertilizers are nitrogen based, and, you know, they're nitrogen compounds or ammonia, and they talk about reducing this because it's bad for the environment. We know that ammonia is kind of like a biological waste product. It's in everyone's urine, for example. You know, it's naturally produced by the decomposition of organic waste. So it's kind of a natural product. And nitrogen in general, if you look at nitrogen in the atmosphere is like 75% nitrogen. And then even just going down the line in terms of, you know, looking at this whole global warming hoax that, you know, it's all human activity, which is causing this massive spike. And of course, it's not actually that massive a spike in the first place. But, you know, carbon dioxide is 0.04% of the atmosphere. And it's supposedly causing this runaway greenhouse effect. And we've got to stop farmers using nitrogen, which is nitrogen compounds, when nitrogen is 75% of the atmosphere.
Yeah,
you know, like what is that meant to achieve other than taking away our ability to feed ourselves, making us more, you know, more reliant on government handouts? And it's basically, you know, if people can't afford food, it's kind of a balancing act. They don't want to make people starve, but they want to push people to that kind of poverty line where they can just keep going, but not so far that they actually revolt.
Yeah, okay, so we're going to go for a break for a couple of minutes. This is Last Man Standing on Sunday the 31st of July. I'm with Euro and Dr. Patrick Slattery. We'll be back in about 3 minutes. On peut chercher l'amour de mille et une manières, tranquillement en passant. Ou alors comme s'il n'y avait rien d'autre à faire. On doit chercher l'amour pour sauver nos peaux de l'effroi, pour sauver nos vies de l'enfer. C'est gravé dans la pierre. Mais quelquefois, il nous arrive un grand amour qui nous emporte sans retour, sans pardon, sans pourquoi. Et alors, voilà le grand amour, celui dont on rêvait toujours, dont on rêvait toujours. On a besoin d'amour, quels que soient nos visages, quelles que soient nos prouesses et quelles que soient nos équipés sauvages. On a besoin d'amour tout comme l'on respire, tu sais. C'est là qu'est notre inespéré, c'est là qu'on se déchire. Il nous arrive d'aimer contre toute espérance, sans l'ombre d'un atout, sans l'ombre d'une chance, comme à genoux. Il nous arrive d'aimer comme des naufragés, tu sais. Comme des possédés, c'est vrai, c'est là qu'est notre chance. Et quelquefois, il nous arrive un grand amour qui nous emporte sans retour, sans pardon, sans pourquoi. Et alors, voilà le grand amour, celui dont on rêvait toujours, dont on rêvait. Thank you.
page blanche qui nous reste à écrire, tout comme l'on se penche. Regarde, regarde, il nous arrive un grand amour qui nous emporte sans retour, sans pardon, sans pourquoi. Et alors voilà le grand amour, celui dont on rêvait toujours, dont on rêvait toujours.
Okay, we are back. You're here with me, Paul Stevenson, on Last Man Standing with Dr. Patrick Slattery and Euro. This is Sunday, the 31st of July, 2022. So where were we? We're talking about nitrogen, Euro, and Patrick was going to comment on that as well. But just finish off your point where you left off there, Euro.
Yeah, well, it's as I mentioned just before the break, you know, all of these so-called eco things are about the dangers of these nitrogen-based fertilizers, which are basically naturally occurring compounds that occur from decomposition of organic materials, and nitrogen being 75% of the Earth's atmosphere, and also the big danger, of course, of carbon dioxide, which is 0.04% of the atmosphere. And that's going to create these massive spikes in temperature, apparently.
Patrick?
Yeah, well, so the it's important to get all of the science and the issues more or less correct. The policies, I mean, the policies of the Green New Deal or the climate change hysteria, these are policies that need to be opposed, right? Obviously. But at the same time, you know, we have to be accurate in what's going on here. And with regards to the nitrogen based fertilizer, the issue isn't that nitrogen is going to get into the atmosphere where it already makes up, you know, close to 80% of the atmosphere. The issue is that, you know, atmospheric nitrogen is N2. So it's two nitrogen atoms, and they have a very, very, very strong bond between them, which renders atmospheric nitrogen virtually inert. I mean, it's very difficult to have chemistry, with that. And so in the, nitrogen based fertilizers, they are produced, and this is something that I think they started in, I think it was in Germany, in the '30s that they, or maybe it was in the '20s, but they started.
I think it was in Germany. Yeah.
Yeah. It was in Germany. And so there's a process for breaking this bond, but it requires a lot of energy. And so one of the major uses of natural gas, methane, natural gas, is in the process of producing nitrogen-based fertilizers. So the issue really isn't with the nitrogen escaping into the atmosphere or the ammonia. It's with the very large amount of energy that goes towards producing these fertilizers. And this is why Russia's got a giant fertilizer industries, because it's got the most important input. The most important input really isn't the nitrogen, because it's all around us. The most important input is the energy. It's the methane in natural gas. So it's important to understand that. And then as for the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, which is 350 parts per million, something like that, which winds up being 0.036 or 0.035,
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, found that.
Yeah. So the if you were to look at it over the past century or so, it has been rising. And you would, it's not a surprise it would rise if you're taking a lot of carbon that's been sequestered in fossil fuels for tens of millions of years and suddenly burning them. You would expect it. Now, there's a lot of things in it, like climate is very, very complex, and there's a lot of factors that go into it. One factor is the greenhouse effect. There's a lot of other factors. And so you would expect an increase in carbon dioxide from, say, 250 parts per million to 350 parts per million or whatever's going on, that it would contribute to a warmer climate. But of course, there's a lot of other factors going on. And, so to what extent are the other factors canceling it out or augmenting it? And, you can have computer models, but at the end of the day, with computer models, you can have garbage in, garbage out. And so it's hard to know what's going to go on. But the policies that they're pursuing, this is never let a perfectly good crisis go to waste. They're obviously pursuing anti-white policies. The policies obviously have an agenda, and the whatever might be going on with the climate or with the environment is just a pretext for these policies. But there is a tendency to just kind of it reminds me of the Monty Python sketch. I don't know if you all remember it, but where Eric Idle walks into an office and he wants an argument. It was a Michael Palin walks in. He wants an argument, and John Cleese is just automatically naysaying anything that Michael Palin says, right? And he says, "This isn't an argument." "Yes, it is." And then just when they start having an actual argument where there's facts and backing, John Cleese says, "Oh, 5 minutes is up." You know, there's never 5 minutes there anyway. There is a tendency for people, for us, for a lot of us, to just automatically naysay whatever is being used against us, whatever is being hit over our heads, whatever is being weaponized, just in kind of automatic naysaying, "This doesn't exist," rather than actually saying your policy is
but that's
stupid.
That's the problem. Yeah. That's the problem, because we are so cynical. When these, we know that everything they do is about control, so you end up throwing the baby out with the bathwater. It's almost impossible to actually have a proper intelligent debate to get to the truth of what's happening or what's not happening, because you know that they're always sort of positioning themselves for more control.
And then honestly, it may be more effective politically. It may be more effective to automatically naysay. You may actually get more done that way. That may be a winning strategy. But personally, I just want to be accurate. And I'm not a political leader. I'm just an analyst. And so I'm trying to be perfectly as accurate as I
objective
as I'm capable of. Objective as I'm capable of. It may be that actually, denying something that's real might be the winning strategy. So anyway.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, our enemies are very adept at that. They just deny what's real, and it's working very well for them.
Yeah. We should have our own 1984 moments, I suppose.
I think, there's discussions that can be had over, whether or not the climate is actually warming, how much of it is human caused. But, as we say, regardless of to what degree it is human caused, it's not going to be catastrophic in the way they tell us. And, the solutions that they propose to supposedly fix it do nothing but to steal wealth from white populations and to transfer them to the third world, or to the particular populations running things who are already very enriched at the expense of us and others.
Yeah. I think we all know who you're talking about.
Even if it was going to be as catastrophic as they say, if the alternative is for them to genocide us, like, why the hell do we care?
Exactly.
Yes. All yes. Right, I hope that the temperature of the Earth goes up by 10 degrees Celsius. The equator will be entirely uninhabitable. Northern Europe will be a paradise once again.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. What else have we got on the agenda then? You had a few things. Let's talk a little bit about Nancy Pelosi in China, because this is important. Sorry, Euros. Patrick, talk to that for 5-7 minutes or something.
Well, it won't be 5 or 7 minutes, but Nancy Pelosi had been, she's the Speaker of the House of Representatives, and she was going to go on an Asian trip, and she is meeting with important officials from Japan and Singapore and Malaysia and somewhere else, and she had been going to include Taiwan on that trip. Now, it was originally scheduled for the spring, but she came down with the dreaded deadly coronavirus, somehow miraculously managed to survive. And so now the trip is planned for August, and the Chinese have, and of course, you know, what is she going to do there? I mean, is this for her insider trading? But at any rate, the Chinese have just made it clear. They've drawn a red line in the sand, and they're saying, you know, if you, send her over, we're going to, you know, we might intercept her aircraft. We're going to send fighter jets up there. And then the Americans are saying, well, we're going to send an escort. And so it culminated in, I guess, over the past couple of days, a 2.5 hour phone call.
The Chinese had that?
Wow.
Supposedly. Yeah. And
the Chinese view Taiwan as a sort of cute existential Cuban missile crisis in reverse.
Yeah.
You know, there's this island so close to them that they claim as being under their sovereignty, which is, you know, populated by their ethnic kin, that is just a launching ground for at best gay ops and subversion and at worst, you know, physically destructive, weapons of all kinds.
And it sounds like it's got parallels to the Ukraine and the Donbass region, actually, with Russia.
To an extent, but, you know, one thing is, and people don't tend to know this, but technically, the government in Taipei claims all of mainland China is under its sovereignty. It still does. I mean, it's stuck with that because, you know, these were two rival governments that had a civil war. And the nationalist government got the government of the Republic of China got chased off the mainland, and it built itself a bastion in Taiwan from which it was going to reinvade. Well, as the decades passed, the prospect of reinvasion of the mainland and conquest of the mainland became completely unrealistic. And some people in Taiwan would rather just have a complete divorce, but opinions very much split. The political class is very much split, and there's the nationalist party that had brought the government, the Republic of China government, to Taiwan. They still want to have some sort of reunification, and so at any rate, everything is frozen. The status quo is frozen in 1949, and the status quo is that both sides claim to be the government of all of China, including the mainland and Taiwan. There's never been a declaration of independence of Taiwan, and the status quo is that the government in Beijing is content with the status quo. They're content to play a waiting game because they think sooner or later there will be some sort of reunification, and they're content to allow the government in Taiwan to operate de facto independent as long as they never declare themselves de jure independent. As soon as they declare themselves de jure independent, they're going to lose their de facto independence because there's going to be an invasion.
Okay. Euro, any further comments on the China situation?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It does have some parallels to what's going on in Ukraine as well. And, Taiwan does claim to be the legitimate government of China. And, you know, as nationalists, we'd probably have more sympathy, with them in the beginning. But as we've seen, you know, the situation that they've been forced into, allying with, the great Satan itself, in America, and, you know, following all these sort of cultural suicide, policies that are being forced upon the Europeans as well. You know, all sympathy for the kind of so-called nationalist cause of, the Chinese in Taiwan has evaporated. I mean, as much as we're not fanboys for China, and we can see that in certain regards they are better than our own governments.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I think Patrick might agree with us, but I always maintain that I'd rather be ruled by China than Jews. What do you think, Patrick?
Yeah, I say that a lot. I say that a lot. And I did my Friday show on RBN was completely devoted to the Taiwan issue, so I don't need to say anything further. People want more information on it. Listen to that show. But the one thing is, what has come out since then is Nancy Pelosi apparently has released her itinerary for her Asia trip, and it does not include a visit to Taiwan. So it looks as if she's back down. You know, I could say she and the government is back down. I don't really think that the Pentagon and the White House were really that enthusiastic. I think this was a Nancy Pelosi initiative. There were people from like Mark Esper, who was the last Secretary of Defense Trump had, and or at least the second one he had, and Mike Pompeo, the second Secretary of State, were all for it. So it was a weird thing that like the people in the Trump administration, who for the most part were traitors to Trump, plus Nancy Pelosi, allying with each other to provoke a war with China. It was very bizarre, but it looks like that Pelosi's going to back down. It's going to be kind of a humiliation for the United States, which can only be a good thing.
Yeah, sure, exactly. And anyway, where would the Chinese and equally with Russia, where would they get the idea anyway that the Americans are going to be aggressive and might start a war? I mean, where would they get that idea from? These are really paranoid people, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, they'd have to be stupid to think that America would start a war with their biggest trading partner, one who they rely on so much. I mean, the Americans would have to be retarded to do that.
Yeah, but I was being facetious to an extent, because obviously, you know, Russia has seen the Libya, Syria, Iraq movie before and doesn't want to be taking part in the sequel. Euro, what else have you got for us? You had a few other topics in the last sort of like maybe 12 minutes or so.
The last main thing I wanted to come on to is the brilliant activism that Patriotic Alternative has been taking part in over here in the UK. So there's a phenomenon that we've seen not just in the UK but in America and other Anglosphere countries, and I'm sure even other European countries, though we're probably just not aware of it as much yet, of the so-called drag queen story hour, in which a garishly cross-dressed homosexual reads to very small children. I've seen Eric Stryker did some brilliant reporting on how all these so-called drag queen story hour organizations are funded by wealthy Jews, and a lot of these so-called drag queens seem to have convictions for sexual abuse of children, as you might expect from their behavior. So this is something that's been happening in cities around the UK. There's a particular guy who's been going to these places, and he is being paid with tax money from the ordinary citizens via these local councils to go to libraries, where he is dressed up garishly as a woman and read anti-white propaganda to small children. And PA have been protesting this up and down the country. They've been putting out leaflets informing citizens, and they've been having protests outside the venue itself. And, you know, it's really starting to pick up a lot of attention, to the point where mainstream media can't ignore it anymore, and they have to report on these things. You know, tabloids like the Daily Mail are speaking about it, but of course they're hesitant to mention PA as much as they kind of feel that they have to. There's been a few articles where they've tried to kind of give the impetus and the praise for what they were doing to other people who themselves have big problems so that they can at a later date discredit these people and poo-poo the amazing activism that has been done by PA on the subject.
Okay, so they'll cover it, but avoid all mention of PA because they don't want to give them any coverage. They don't want people looking in to see that PA are actually a very good organization that care about people in the community. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes, it's definitely something that they've been doing. I saw an article today which had exactly one mention of PA, and there was one in the same news organization yesterday, which, you know, strangely enough, gave exactly zero mention of PA at all. But, you know, there's the public have been angered by this, you know, as they quite rightly should be. And we've seen, you know, just normal mothers go to these things and, you know, protesting as well as, you know, PA activists. And there's even been at the last few, there's been some Antifa show up and basically start attacking ordinary mothers who are worried about the threat that these people pose to their kids. So it's something
as you do.
Yeah, I mean it's something that's really kind of heating up, and we'll have to see where that goes. And I'm sure Mark is very aware that Mark Collette, that is, I'm sure that Mark Collette, leader of PA, is very aware that he has to be careful how PA presents this issue. Because, you know, child abusers in this country have a special status, as is very clear with the things that get covered up with the grooming gangs, places like Rotherham, Telford, Aylesbury, all up and down the country. You know, whether it's Islamic or whether it's LGBTP, child abusers not just get a free hand, but actually get kind of state support. And protection.
Yeah. Yeah. It's disgusting. We spoke off air, didn't we, briefly about that incident where the LGBTQ, someone compared it to the new Nazis or authoritarianism or whatever, and resulted in the someone who reposted it getting arrested. So you can get arrested for this type of thing.
There was, I believe.
Paedophilia, grooming gangs, all good.
I believe it was somebody posted. Now, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this so-called like woke LGBT flag, and it's got all the rainbow colors, and then it's got like a chevron coming in from the side with the trans colors and brown to represent, you know, sexual deviance and non-whites especially. And, you know, because of that chevron, somebody decided, oh, it'd be really funny to take four of these and arrange them rotated at 90 degrees so those chevrons form into the pattern of a swastika to say, well, it's these trannies who are the real Nazis, guys. Of course, leaving aside the obvious fact of Magnus Hirschfeld and, you know, the previous original iteration of trans and trans kids that was shut down by the National Socialists in Germany.
Oh, yeah.
And all the promotional materials burned, you know.
Yeah, well, I you know, when it comes to Hitler's Germany and the essentially Jewish, I think I would rather be ruled, much rather be ruled by those. Bit like the Chinese, Patrick, rather be ruled by Adolf Hitler than Jews.
One could make that point.
One could make that point. Very nice. All right. So, yeah, and hats off to Patriotic Alternative for that. I mean, and hats off to Mark Collett because he's a machine and he does fantastic work.
I was just going to say, you know, when I was talking to Mark Collett about this, and he was pointing out that, you know, all this trannyism and gay marriage and all this stuff happened during conservative governments. So why don't we rename this Drag Time Tory Hour?
Yeah, right. Very good.
Might be a show title, that one.
Yeah, well, Pat, I was hoping Mark could have joined us today.
It already has been.
Yeah, I was hoping Mark was going to join us. He was going to join us last week, but I postponed it. I was back late, and then he's doing a book review tonight. But wasn't it just on a final point of positivity, Euro? Wasn't the camping trip really, really amazing? I thought it was really great. I was really a bit sad when I left there. You know, you're all these people around and such a great vibe, and then I was just like back home again. You know, it was great though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a brilliant weekend, and it was so. It was so great to see, you know, the rate at which PA has been growing and just the amount and the quality of the people who were there. And of course, I've made lifelong friends through PA who I see regularly at these events. And I very much look forward to the next one.
Oh yeah, big time. Yeah, it was great. And yeah, it was nice. The track, I met so many people because you're like, you know, some people go ahead and then you're walking with someone and you get a chat to, you know, the chance to talk to someone, and then you stop and then you end up chatting to someone else. And it was really, really cool. 175 people, Patrick, at a camping trip. That's, that really was something, I thought. You know, it was like really cool. That's a lot of people at a camping trip, you know,
and almost all of them came on the hike as well, like 10 mile hike. In one of the hottest days of the year, not quite 40 degrees, but still one of the hottest days of the year when we did it.
I had to laugh because obviously Mark was warning everybody about, you know, protection and bringing the right fluids and sun cream, and he came back like a lobster.
Yeah, he did come back kind of worse for wear. I managed to avoid the worst of it myself, but I mean it doesn't help that he tends to wear this black t-shirt on the hiking trips, which will attract all the heat and make him a lot, you know, not more reliant on water than he otherwise would be. But yeah, I guess that's just something about Mark, that he you know, he likes the black shirt aesthetic,
and he's incredibly pale as well. So, but I mean I'm pretty pale myself, but I because I work in gardens, I've kind of got a bit of sort of, you know, I'm kind of used to it, so I didn't get burnt. My skin's sort of like you know, it's sort of kind of prepared. It's got a certain level of natural protection, so I didn't wear anything, and I was still absolutely fine, you know.
I mean, I've got a very bad case of t-shirt tan in general, but I was very careful of applying sunscreen to the back of my neck, because that's always the first area to get burned. But
I think he said it might be 3 days next year. I really can't wait. I'm going to be properly prepared the next time Euro, because my friend, as you know, forgot to bring my tent. Kind of a minor detail, I guess, when you go camping that you don't have a tent. So I slept in your porch the first night, which is I will thank you publicly for your accommodation that night, Euro.
Yep, no, I'm always glad to help out, and it was great to hang out with you there and whatnot. So, you know, I hope we'll see more international guests, perhaps Patrick and people like him at the next events that we have.
We don't want troublemakers like Slattery.
Yeah, maybe not him. We'll see.
No, it's a big troublemaker. Never stops talking about Jews and stuff.
Oh, he'd be so out of place with. So.
Yeah, Patrick, would you come over for that? Would you be up for that? Would you make it?
I would. Maybe not next year, but perhaps a year after that.
All right.
I'm busy with.
I don't know about anyone else, but with me personally, I've kind of been completely out of the idea of being able to travel to any foreign countries for the foreseeable future because of my refusal to take experimental gene altering injections.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I'm going to France next year, but I'll go or next month, but I'll go across in the boat because I don't like flying anyway. So I can drive to Paris and just go across in the boat. And it's quite chilled out. It's 90 minutes on the boat, which is
quite
nice.
Can you get the Coast Guards to take you across, or does that only work one way?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm only booking one way, obviously, because I can get a free trip coming back.
You know, make sure you get a mega suntan when you're there, and then just turn up on the beach near Calais. And
I'll meet the homies on the beach. Should be fun. All right,
just careful you don't catch monkeypox. you know, while you're over there.
Yeah. Obviously, I'll come back with a weapon as well. You get supplied with a weapon on these ferry or these.
I know that's a joke, Paul, but we have to be very clear that that is a joke referring to non-whites coming into this country or being allowed to come into this country with weapons.
With guns.
We ourselves would never commit any illegal acts.
Exactly. All right, lads. Thank you very much for joining me, and I'll be back. Well, I will be on Andrew Current and Hitchcock tomorrow at Patrick. Are you joining me on there? We're doing that show together, aren't we?
I am. Yes.
Okay. That goes out on the Rents Network at it's 2 p.m. UK time, so that's 8 a.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern time. So that's Andrew Current and Hitchcock, who wrote the book. The Synagogue of Satan will be live there. And then I'm on with Richard Carey tomorrow. We'll be on the official narrative on here on RBN at midday Central. And then I will also be on. How am I going to do all this? I'm also going to be on with David Duke tomorrow as well. So I've got a busy day tomorrow. But you can join us, David Duke. That will be 4 p.m. UK time or 10 a.m. Central, 11 Eastern time. That's with David Duke. That also goes out on the Rents Network, but just daviddjuke.com. You can find that. Thanks again, lads. Any closing thoughts?
No, it's been great to come on to the show, and I look forward to the next one as well. But that's all from me. See ya.
Thank you. Okay, Patrick, take care, and I'll speak to you tomorrow again.
Okay, thank you.